Now that intro needs like a 2 beats continued at the end there. All right. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Honey Badger Radio. My name is Brian, and I'm here with our very special guest, Bob Lewis, not his real name. This is the Fireside Chat number 121, talking about the manosphere, misandry, and men's issues going mainstream. I put a lot of M's in the intro there. So hello, Bob. How are you, man?
Doing good, man. How you doing?
I am doing very well. Thank you very much. It's finally cooled off a little bit here in Chicago. The heat wave is over. I can tolerate being in this city. I swear I wanted to move to Fargo. It was so hot. So So we're going to be talking about a bunch of different things. And one of the main things that I've noticed is there's been a lot of talk about things within the manosphere, both like inside and outside. And so I think the men's movement, or let's say just like men's issues as a talking point, are starting to creep into the mainstream. So, and I think that this is not necessarily an entirely good thing. I think it comes with some baggage. What do you say to that?
Well, you know, I'm not quite a free speech absolutist. In other words, I don't believe in the incitement of violence, but I do support the Supreme Court's interpretation of free speech in general. And so I think that when we discuss the manosphere and when we talk about it from a mainstream perspective, I think any discussion of the manosphere is a positive discussion, because at least people are willing to bring their agreements and disagreements within the various aspects of the various tribes of the manosphere to the public's attention. So I think that having that conversation is good, but I think that when it devolves into censored, one-sided propaganda, that's where the problems start. So for me, that's kind of my position on it as far as, you know, answering the question in kind of a very basic general way.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with that too. Like I think that in general, this is what I've noticed from the time that I've started doing this, which is about 4 years ago, maybe even 5 years ago now. I've noticed that the men's issues as a discussion has gone from something that most people consider to be completely laughable to something that now people have to wrestle with. And the wrestling with the idea, I don't have a problem with. I guess what I'm saying is that we need to be a bit vigilant, because this is also when it becomes ripe for people to try to, come into these movements and change them. And either revert them to the status quo, or they use them to like get, you know, to benefit in some way, or, you know, take advantage of them. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely. What you're discussing is entryism. And entryism, for those that don't know, basically what this is it's a tactic that was developed by communists in the 1920s and the 1930s, mm-hmm. whereas communist groups could surreptitiously infiltrate larger groups, whether it be the Democratic Party or whether it be men's rights organizations, women's rights organizations, you know, different groups that were larger, and then co-opt those groups for their own purposes. And what's interesting is, I know you talked about this article that you wanted me to kind of comment on later on in the stream, but that article is a good example of entryism within the manosphere, specifically within the tribe of the men's rights group within the manosphere. And we've seen this for a long time. We've seen the Good Cuck Project and things like that, where feminists mm-hmm. are really trying to change the way men think, and all this feminist indoctrination. And I want to make sure something's abundantly clear for everybody that's watching. When I say feminist indoctrination, and when I talk about feminist bigotry, I'm not talking about a hatred of women. Feminism is not a gender. Okay, there's women, there's men, and there you go. That's it. That's what biology teaches us with mammals across the board, not just humans. When I'm discussing feminism, what I'm discussing is an ideology. I'm discussing a political ideology. I am not discussing a gender. And that is one of the biggest mistakes when people speak of feminism. That is one of the biggest mistakes people make, is they conflate the ideology with a gender.
Yeah, I think that's actually by design, though. And I mean, like, this can get into a really meta discussion, which I don't mind, about how I think the left has intentionally poisoned language so that we can't talk about feminism without people thinking we're talking about women. And we can't just across the board, right, in all kinds of ways. And I think that it's important to continue to point it out for as long as it has to be pointed out, because not only is feminism not women, but feminism disadvantages women in its own way. And, you know, like it clearly targets men, but it also hurts women in the process.
Oh, I absolutely agree. It definitely victimizes women. And if you don't believe me, ask yourself, where's the Me Too movement and where is the feminist outcry with the Epstein charges? Okay, this man has sex trafficked dozens and dozens of young girls, okay, mm-hmm. to the rich and the powerful. Where's the Me Too group? Where's the pink pussy hats? Where are the protesters? That is one of the indefensible hypocrisies of the feminist movement. When you look at situations and you look at current events and you say, okay, if feminism really cared about women, they would be absolutely crucifying Epstein for everything that he did. But their silence is deafening here. Again, it's an indefensible hypocrisy. And I agree with you. We could definitely go down this rabbit hole and maybe we can do this on another stream. Wink, sure. Wink, nudge, nudge.
Yeah, yeah.
But, but I mean, obviously you had kind of a direction you wanted to take this stream to. So let's talk about that.
Well, yeah, I wanted to mainly focus on the manosphere in general. So I want to give you a little bit of backstory as to why this is. So we're organizing the International Conference on Men's Issues this year. This time it's being organized by the Honey Badgers. In the past, it's been done by different groups, a Voice for Men, Justice for Men and Boys, and so on. And they're great. I love the stuff that Paul Elam does. I love the stuff that, the folks at Justice for Men and Boys do. But we wanted to try our hand at it, and when we got involved with it, I thought, let's have guys from all over the manosphere come, and because I wanted to see where they were at, because I think that, in a way, they kind of broken off into little splinter groups, and so I wanted to know what the individual splinter groups' views were, and how we are similar, and in what ways we are different, and maybe work those things out, right? So I was trying to get on. I thought a really interesting panel would be to get on one MRA, one PUA or Red Pillar or whatever you want to call it, and one MGTOW, just for starters, and then find out where they all agree and find out where they all disagree, and not just random members, but people that are relatively respected within those kind of subgroups. And I guess I was surprised to find, maybe not so surprised to find, that it's actually a lot harder to do than I thought.
Well, I think that part of the reason for that is that a lot of the different tribes within the manosphere, they cultivate a cult of personality. Mm-hmm. And so if you talk about men going their own way, for example, I mean, the idea is that each individual man is to go his or her own way. But what you end up finding out is that those content creators who are successful in that space, they end up being targeted by a bunch of people who want to drama market their channels, because traditionally speaking, smaller YouTubers would often drama market the channel to create a necessary drama with larger YouTubers for the express purpose of growing their channel.
Yeah.
However, when you look at my content, which is a little bit different than a lot of other people's, when I actually have a conversation about somebody or I am expressing concerns about another individual or a content creator, I'm doing so using evidence and facts and things like that. And I try to keep my personality out of it a little bit because I want people to focus on the facts. I don't want them to focus on the drama. Mm-hmm. And, as men, we always have to deal with that drama. And the other side of it is that when you're dealing with the different tribes within the manosphere, many of us agree on 70 to 80% of everything that's going on, whether you're a PUA, whether you're part of the MGTOW community, whether you're an MRA, whether you're a TradCon, it doesn't matter kind of where your position is within the manosphere, which tribe you belong to. We agree on 70 to 80%, but it's those small disagreements we have that keep us apart. And mm-hmm. I believe that some of those disagreements at some level with certain content creators, I think some of that's an AstroTurf campaign to keep us all apart. Because once men unite, there's not a lot that anybody can do to stop us. I mean, exactly. Men did build society.
That's exactly what I was thinking, is that again, the stuff that what you're saying, I think that most of them agree on most of the issues. The only areas that I believe we disagree are probably revolve around the solutions to those issues, whether it's just a nihilistic approach of just fuck everybody, I'm just going to do me, or whether it's a we need to organize and, you know, and collect ourselves and sort of like move in X direction, or we need to, you know, just like force women in some social way, not like physically, to, you know, we just need to like kick them in the butts and get them in line, or whatever it is that people think, you know, you need to do. And I think that that's the part, though, where we disagree, or where we might disagree, because I don't know that we entirely do either. That's where the most important conversations within the manosphere about the future of the relations between men and women, that's where they should take place. But I do think that, you know, you're absolutely right. I think there are issues with a cult of personality within these sort of tribes, these subgroups. And there's also, I guess there are issues with, as you were saying, astroturfing, where you think that there are people who are intentionally trying to almost maintain their distance from the other tribes.
Well, and not only just maintain their distance, but I mean, I know of people specifically who I won't name names at this point within the men going their own way community who false flag videos. They will false flag videos. They attempt to dox other people. And I know I've been falsely accused of doxing, and I've been the great Satan to some of these people because I have my own opinion. And that's the thing, is that, you know, because I support free speech, I don't necessarily have to agree with everybody. I just want to be able to form my own opinion. But it's interesting that you bring this up about this idea of building bridges amongst the tribe of the manosphere, or the different tribes of the manosphere rather, because that's one of the things that I've tried to do by joining the Red Man group, you know, and being part of the permanent panel. And basically there's a lot of people like, you know, I don't agree with everything they say, but mm-hmm. I agree with most of what they say, and I absolutely agree with their politics. And I think that that's one of the ways where different tribes within the manosphere, we could start building bridges and creating those relationships. And then we can disagree on the issues, but still maintain those relationships. That's the thing that's important, because at the end of the day, like I said, when men stand together, there isn't anything we can't do. And I mean, it kind of reminds me of the movie 300, right? Yeah. When they talk about, you know, how when the disabled guy, the Quasimodo looking guy,
the hunchback, yeah.
Yeah, he had a hunchback. He wanted to be part of the Spartans, and they were like, look, this is what you have to do. Every man supports each other. Every man has to have his shield locked in with each other. Every man has to have his spear, you know, in the right spot. So not only does each man have to be strong in and of themselves, but they have to be strong together as a strong community. This is one of the reasons that I talk about the dangers of social isolation, and why I absolutely promote men being in each other's spaces and communicating and having these conversations. Because at the end of the day, the reality is that the relationships and the ethics should be far more important than the disagreements, or, you know, when they come to the specific issues. Because again, when you look at your own family, when any of the viewers here talk about their own families and they communicate with their own families, I guarantee you there's going to be things you disagree with your sister, with your mom, with your dad, you know, with your aunts, with your uncles, with your cousins, and even your children. So why is it that we're not taking those real life lessons and applying them to our relationships with the manosphere? And I think anybody who opposes that sort of thing, I got to question their ethics, because again, you know, my goal here is to build bridges. It's to communicate with a lot of people, and it's to spread the knowledge and the wisdom of the manosphere far and wide. And yeah, you may disagree with some of it, and I may disagree with some of it, but that doesn't invalidate the knowledge in and of itself, because at least we know exactly what it is we are agreeing with and what it is we are disagreeing with.
Yeah, exactly. Let me ask you a question about the Red Man group, because a lot of people here don't know what that is. So can you tell us a little bit about it, and what is it about them that you think is in what ways do you agree? If you can talk about this, I'm not sure. In what ways do you agree, and in what ways do you not agree, and how are they sort of congruent or parallel to groups like us, like Honey Badger Radio?
Well, I think one of the advantages of the Red Man group is that it's led by men. It's led by masculine men. When you look at people like Donovan Sharp, or you look at Steve the Dean Williams, or you look at the founder, Anthony Dream Johnson, you have to really understand these guys come from more of a PUA / red pill attitude. They're kind of more of an old school Manosphere sort of attitude. And even though they come from, like, I don't really have a lot of respect for PUAs in general, because I think a lot of them are thirsty cucks, but the guys on the panel aren't. That's the difference. The guys on the panel, they, you know, Anthony Dream Johnson used to be a PUA. He uses that red pill wisdom, and he uses it elsewhere. There are guys on the Red Man group that are tradcons. They promote the family. They promote being a good father. They promote being strong men in their communities. They promote this idea that we as individuals, as men, we need to improve ourselves. And that's the positive message of the Red Man group. And they've had, I think they just did episode 73 recently. And so the advantage is that they bring a lot of different men together. The other advantage is that they promote masculine personalities across the internet. So when it comes to smaller YouTubers, regardless of whether, you know, which tribe of the Manosphere that they're at, they promote these individuals. They say, look, come on to the Red Man group, be part of the panel, you know, contribute to the discussion, build your brand, and talk to us about who you are, not only as an individual, but who you are as a brand, who you are as a personality. What is it that you're doing? You know, because some of these guys, you know, there's a guy who runs the Family Alpha, Hunter Drew, you know, this guy's a father, he's married, you know, and he's helping men be better fathers. These mm-hmm. types of things, these types of activities, they're absolutely crucial to masculine men. And let me explain why. Groups like the Red Man group do a public service, because there has been a war on men since second wave feminism. Now, I'm not going to beat the feminism drum too hard beyond saying that, at least for purposes of the point that I'm trying to make, which is that men don't have valid mentorship in their lives for the most part, because many of the men who still are in families, they're betas, they're cucked, they're doormats, because, you know, their wives walk all over them. And you know, they're just trying to figure it out and trying to deal with it. And all the strong men that could have given them the wisdom to make their families better, to make them better fathers, to make them better entrepreneurs, to make them better leaders, those men don't exist because feminists destroy them. Mm-hmm. You see this with the Me Too movement in corporate America, where, oh, this person's a very popular and effective corporate leader, let's Me Too his ass and take him out. That's the sad part. So groups like Red Man Group, you know, organizations like, you got your convention coming up, the International Conference on Men's Issues. You've got the 21 convention that's coming up in Poland. And then in October, it's going to be in Orlando. All these groups, all these organizations, all these events, they promote positive masculinity. And I think that that's the thing that is absolutely missing from our society, is that now we are at a point where the counterculture has to promote healthy masculinity. It has to promote positive masculinity. This mm-hmm. is something the Red Man group does in spades, and they do it in a way that no one else does. And I am proud to be on the panel with that particular group, because that's what they do. Now, I'm not saying that at the end of the day, that they're the perfect thing, right? And I'm not saying that all their messaging is positive. I'm saying that for the overall message that they get, absolutely. You know, listen to what they're doing and watch what they're doing and go from there. Because I'll tell you what, we have blue pillars that are terrified of us every place. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's the problem, is that people are threatened by positive masculinity. They're threatened by red pill men. They're threatened by men within the Manosphere. And I'm not just talking about any particular tribe, whether it be PUA or, you know, men's rights activists or MGTOW or any of the other, you know, family tradcons. There's a lot of people that are intimidated by a strong, for lack of a better term, I don't like using this term, but for lack of a better term, strong alpha men, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's like what Bruce Lee said. So when I look at the Red Man group, I look at it from a Bruce Lee perspective. You take what is useful and you discard the rest. And depending on who you are as a man, or who you are as an individual, or who you are as a parent, some of what's said may be useful, some of what's said may be not, based on your lifestyle and based on what you're doing. But there's a lot of wisdom there for everybody. Yeah. So That's my thought process on the Red Man group. Everybody there has been fantastic. And even where we disagree, the men there are strong enough that they can disagree on issues without destroying the relationship. And that level of steel sharpening steel doesn't exist everywhere. It takes a strong man to do that. And unfortunately, because of, you know, the 40 years of feminism that's controlled society, we have a lot of fragile men out there. And again, that's not necessarily their fault, but I'm saying that groups like the Red Man Group, you know, streams like this one, Honey Badgers, you know, your conference on men's issues, the 21 convention, and all these different things. All these things are there to educate men from a specific lens. All these things are there to provide men a space. And we need more of that. We used to have that. A lot of this knowledge used to be very common knowledge. Now it's esoteric wisdom. And it's really sad that it's gotten to this point. So, yeah. So I think that, you know, hopefully I didn't kind of, you know, soapbox too much. But that's my thoughts on the Red Man Group and why I strongly promote it.
I hear what you're saying. I think that it is absolutely crucial that men find their masculine mentors, they start to engage in with other men about, you know, just like men need spaces too. Spaces to grow, spaces to develop, spaces to teach, to learn from each other. And, you know, if that's what this is doing, I'm 110% for that. Because I think that it's a different service than what, well, I wouldn't even say a service. It's a different benefit, I guess. It's a different goal than, say, what MRAs are doing. Like, MRAs want to deal with stuff on the legal level and to a lesser extent on the social cultural level. But when you're talking about rights, we're talking about legal stuff. And those things are important because, you know, ultimately, these would be things that will, you know, really make life for men a living hell if they're not treated equally. And on top of that, the feminist narrative persists that these men who are being treated unfairly are actually the ones that actually have all of the power, right? And so that needs to be just undercut. Like, we need to get past that. We need to deal with these issues. However, if we're not in a cultural place that actually has enough strength in men to, like, you know, say this is what we need and these are the things we have to change to make lives better, not just for myself, but for my sons and my son's sons and so on, right? But we also need to do that for women. And I think that that's another angle that's either, that's why the women that are in the MRM usually talk about that angle, because it's like what we currently have is a system where men are given purpose. Well, let me put it this way. They are defined. Their worth is defined by what they can do. And so their whole life is based on purpose and chasing value by creating it. Women are given value by default. So what this takes away from them is an opportunity to earn purpose. So a woman becomes purposeless, and that actually hurts them. And men are given too much, like that's it's sort of overblown. So that means that if a man doesn't make it, or if he doesn't meet this kind of standard, then he feels like a failure, and we treat him like one. So we have to, like, work on those things as well. So I think that you need all of these, all these groups have something to contribute. This is why I think that a desire for me anyway to build bridges, that's where it comes from. Because I know that the guys in the men, there's value in the Red Man Group. I actually been trying to get Elliot Hulse on the show to talk to him about this stuff for a long time as an example, because I've seen him go from fitness guy or fitness guru to, you know, a member of the Red Man Group talking about masculinity. And I saw that he, like, came across MGTOW and everything. So I could see that path that he was on. But at the same time, you know, people like Allison and Karen and other for females that are either in the MRM or they're just talking about the issues in general, they see how this is impacting women too, because, you know, a woman without purpose, like a person without purpose, may as well not exist. And so we need to make it long story short, men need more compassion and women need more responsibility, because right now it's flipped the other way and it's 100% that way.
Well, I think that, yeah, and I think that a more accurate way to say that is that women need to be more accountable.
Yes.
And and men need to be given more opportunity. And I don't mean opportunity as far as outcome is concerned. I mean opportunity as in get on the playing field and what can you earn? Mm-hmm. You know, and I think that you hit the nail on the head. You know, the MRA, they are working on the legal side of things. They're working on the political side of things. You know, the PUAs are working on the personal development side of things. You know, the men going their own way group is working on self-preservation, you know, and everybody's working on an aspect of what the manosphere is. But the mm-hmm. reality is that we need all of it.
Yes, we do.
And what people don't understand is, like, I see guys in the manosphere. There's a, you know, somebody in the manosphere who, for right now, when we get to it, we'll probably talk to it. But this person says, don't be political. You know, I'm not political. I'm apolitical. Well, that's mm-hmm. like that quadriplegic martial artist that wants to fight in MMA who, you know, he's quadriplegic. You've taken all his weapons away and he can't defend himself. Well, the same is true for masculine men. I mean, if you're an adult masculine man living in Western society, you need to be voting. You need to be politically active.
Absolutely.
You need to be politically aware and you need to be politically educated so that you understand who the enemies of man are. Because I'll tell you, the laws continue to get worse and worse. And while the content creators in YouTube are doing their best to educate these men, the reality is we need real world crossover. We need to have men willing to do the things that feminists have done in order to make change. There has to be lawfare. There has to be, you know, a level of education and understanding. It's interesting that you bring up Elliot Hulse, because, again, a lot of feminists, they've jumped the shark. Like with the Kavanaugh hearings, the Kavanaugh hearings were great for the manosphere because they really demonstrated exactly how much feminism hates men. And it also shows who the enemies of man are. That's why, like, I always talk about, like, if you ever want to talk to somebody and you want to find out if they're an enemy of man or an enemy of the United States, ask them what their position is on hate speech. And if they think that hate speech should be barred, then you understand they're an enemy of man. And they are an enemy of the United States Constitution. And so knowing that, we have to make sure that we not only are personally responsible for ourselves and personally improving our lives on a one-on-one basis, you know, every man for himself type of thing, we have to put in the work individually. But we also have to consider what our community looks like. You know, what kind of men do we want for the next generation or the generation after that? We need to be making political decisions to make those positive impacts for our children and for our grandchildren and the other people, you know, in our communities. So yeah. I think that you're absolutely correct when it comes to that. You know, we need to be building bridges across the manosphere, and we need to be having these conversations even where we disagree.
Yeah, because I mean, you know, feminism is a monolith effectively, and they get women interested in politics. They get them voting. That's why, I mean, not only are there a few more women than men in the States, but more of them vote. We need to shake men out of nihilism. We need to let them remind them that they have, that they, what they do matters, and that they matter as people. And we know that we all, like, are looking out for each other, and that they, we, that all of these groups, like you said, they have something to offer. You know, and I think that if men took the best parts of what every one of these red pill manosphere communities has to offer them, self-improvement, self-preservation, not putting women on a pedestal, not worshiping them just because they exist, and looking at their actual areas where their actual, you know, rights are being violated or they're being treated unfairly, so they can prepare for those things until we can change them, then they would be much better men. And I think that that is, like, definitely at the core of it, you know. And also, what's interesting about that is, potentially, I always say this because I had an incel on a few weeks ago. And I was talking to this incel. And, you know, incels are pretty black-pilled guys. They have a doom and gloom view on everything. And, of course, a lot of it has to do from the fact that they are socially isolated. I believe that incels are not only socially isolated from women, but they're also socially isolated from men, which is why they don't find that, for example, buying a prostitute is enough to give them satisfaction. And I was talking to him, and I was trying to explain that, you know, what's interesting is that if you just... And I didn't try to give him advice, because you don't, like, they don't want that. But one of the things that I was talking about is if a man just does self-improvement for its own sake, you know, he just works on himself and, you know, he just gets into a MGTOW mindset of, I don't need a woman to make me whole. I can do that on my own, right? And then they start to, hey, you know, make friendships with other men that are in your immediate circle, not just on the internet, but like, you know, in your physical vicinity, and try to spend time with them and work on yourself just for its own sake. What's interesting about that is if you do that and you actually like go after as much of a masculine ideal of the self, not just like some, you know, thing out there that's not within reach, but for the self, and you achieve that, then oddly enough, and I didn't tell him this, but this is just something that I know is true, women will become attracted to that. And so you can actually have some influence on women by extension. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. Listen, I always tell people too, you work on yourself, you exercise, you educate yourself, you know, you work on self-improvement. Women will present themselves to you. And this is one of the things that, like, I know a lot of PUAs will probably disagree with me on this, but I've always said that it was the women who are the hunters and not the men. You see, yeah. It's up to the man to be able to determine when the woman makes herself available, because it's the woman who determines whether or not the sexual intercourse is going to happen.
Oh, yeah.
And when absolutely. The woman, yeah. And when the woman makes sure that she's like, okay, here's what's going on, right? Then the man has to be able to interpret that, and then he moves forward, you know. And again, there's always the other joke too. If you go to bed with a woman and she takes off her clothes and she's wearing matching bra and underwear, you didn't make the decision to sleep with her. She made the decision to sleep with you. So just be kind of be aware of that. Like, she'd already planned on it. Yeah. So I think that when those types of things come up, I think that's a real thing. The thing about incels is that incels, they don't want to self-improve. That's why they're incels. Mm-hmm. They don't want to improve their lives. They don't want to do anything to improve their lives. I mean, even if they're on disability, they can educate themselves. Men have either time or money, and both are tools. And so you have to be able to use those tools to your advantage, because if you don't, you know, your life is going to suffer for it. And why should men get in shape? It's to have a better quality of life. It's to be able to say, okay, I have the physical strength I need to do X, Y, and Z. You know, don't get in shape because you're a thirsty cuck. Get in shape because you want to live a healthy life. Get in shape because you want to live a longer life. Men die before women do because men don't take care of themselves. But the men who do take care of themselves, they live long and healthy and prosperous lives.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I got a super chat. I'm going to read it out real quick. Philip Tanzer gives us £10 and says, hey, Badgers, I am currently working on a website called formen.international. The plan is to make the MRM more connected and information and international statistics more accessible. Well, thank you. You know that there's it's kind of a men's rights Wikipedia now. I don't know if it's just men's rights or if it's all Manosphere stuff, but there is a Wikipedia for it. I have to go find the link sometime and put it in the low bar.
Let me show my website while he's shilling his for a second. Sure. So I know you have my website back there. This is a brand new website, just came out the other day. Originally it was a landing page. But the reason I want to kind of shill this website a little bit is because not only are my videos posted on the website, but I have a section for memes, for, you know, a wide variety of memes, all of which are inappropriate.
Let me close that.
Yeah, no, the website's fine, just don't open the memes at work. It's okay. Not suitable for work. Okay.
All right,
however,
all right.
If you go to the research tag, there are studies and articles and such that are included within the research, so you're going to see this as kind of a destination spot for research as well. Also, you're going to see that there's authors and contributors. So if people go to info@misandrytoday.com, they can contribute articles, they can contribute knowledge, they can contribute a variety of, you know, information to the website if that's what they want to do. You can even write under your own byline, but you can see the research that's there. There's not much there yet because, again, it's a brand new website, so we're just in the process of working out all the kinks. But under the contact page, it's info@misandrytoday.com, and you know, so there's a lot of opportunity here for this to be a destination, or one of the destinations within the Manosphere, for people to write articles, for people to promote their work. If you have something that you're trying to sell, like a book or an event or things like that, I can actually advertise on this site. I have myself and my team, we run this site completely. So there's a lot of opportunity there. for people to kind of, you know, get the word out on whatever it is that they're doing. It's definitely a destination spot. And I just kind of want to let people know kind of where things are. So yeah, I'm very proud of it. It took a lot of work, a lot of time, and a lot of effort. And I owe a debt of gratitude for a lot of the work that the Cash and Prizes documentary team did on this, specifically Michael Combs, the producer. So, you know, check out the website, kind of spend some time, check out some of the memes. If you have some things that you want to contribute, again, feel free to send it to info@missandrewtoday.com. Check out the videos that are there. The BitChute links are there as well. But one of the other advantages of it is this. Anytime that I put a video out or anytime I put content out, you can go to the website and it'll be on that website specifically so that I don't get algo censored by YouTube or anybody else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they'll definitely go check it out. I did put a link to the website in the low bar and I am displaying it since, you know, obviously you're not on camera, so there's no point in sharing the Skype screen. The other thing is I want to go back to how this whole conversation is starting to go mainstream and what the dangers are. And I saw this. Oh, by the way, another thing for your data. I just got this article. Well, no, actually, it's pretty old, but this came across my desk theoretically or figuratively the other day. Apparently, 80%. There was a study done a few years back, something like 80% of domestic violence deaths were men. And so there are, like, you know, despite domestic violence being a relatively, you could argue, a non-gendered issue because both men and women participate in it, more men die from domestic violence.
Well, let's touch on that for a second because mm-hmm. there's a hidden number that nobody's talking about. Now, one of the things I do behind the scenes is I do travel a little bit and I try to help people with specific cases and circumstances. So usually I'll work with their attorney and try to help them out. One of the things that's an issue is this. When it comes to domestic violence, you know the number that's not included in male death? It's white knight on male domestic violence victim yes. death. It's conspiracy yeah. to commit domestic violence.
Yeah, by proxy, basically.
By proxy. Well, it's specifically conspiracy to commit domestic violence. Mm. So I think that the thing that a lot of people don't understand is that if a woman wants to commit domestic violence against a man, what she will do is she will have sex with another man or she will wrongfully influence another man, lie to them, and then she'll get that other man to commit the violence in her stead. Mm-hmm. Definitely it's a white knight thing, but a lot of men get killed as a result of this. A lot of men get attacked as a result of this. You know, they get their property vandalized, you know, they get their windows smashed in, they get their vehicles sabotaged, you know, they get their houses broken into, lit on fire, you know, arson, the whole thing. And I go into this a little bit in my book, #ShillAlert, The Feminist Lie, where I talk about the male victims of domestic violence. But the problem is when you're measuring male victims of domestic violence, specifically of domestic violence homicide, no one ever wants to measure the male and male crime where the one man killed the other man, you know, because of the golden vagina.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely it's a hidden number. And I guarantee you that BBC article that you flashed on the screen just a second ago, I guarantee you that number would skyrocket if you included those numbers as well.
I agree. I think that is a hidden number that's left out. And this is not also including, because usually when women commit violence, you know, especially in domestic situations, if they do it, they're going to use someone else to do it. And so whether it's another man, as per your example, or the police, who the judges do because it's a woman, they'll beat up the man when they show up. Or they'll hire someone like a hitman or, you know, somebody knows some seedy characters and they'll kick the guy's ass for him. I mean, I live in Chicago and it's actually quite common in the, let's say, more urban parts of the city where I live, where a woman will, you know, she's got a brother and he's in the local street gang and they get the gangbangers to, you know, kick the boyfriend's ass for her or the exes or whoever. And so this doesn't reflect on her, because she didn't, you know, personally do it, but it's definitely something of a factor that has to be considered. And so that ends up vanishing into the ether as a result.
I'm looking at the $2 super chat. No audiobook for The Feminist Lie yet. I've had a lot of transition in the last year, and I've been working on a lot of different things. So that kind of got put on the back burner. At some point, there will be an audiobook. I just don't know when. So thank you for the $2 super chat, Master Rogue.
All right. If you need anybody to do the reading, like whenever you're ready, let me know, because I know people that probably
sounds
could
good.
Do
thank
it.
You.
Yeah, Exploding Pretty at Work gives us $2 and says, any thoughts on the SmackDown in Toontown? I don't know what you're talking about, but do you?
Nope, have no clue.
Okay.
Maybe if they put in the chat, I'm going to monitor the chat. Maybe if they can be more specific within the chat itself, then maybe we can go from there.
Okay, cool. The other thing is, so like I was saying before, the men's issues discussion has been growing. And it's getting to the point where the mainstream can't ignore it. And I saw this article that somebody gave me. I'm not going to read the whole thing. I'm just going to give you the gist of it. But this isn't like a new idea, because ever since people – I'm certain this has gone back to, you know, second wave feminism when Warren Farrell started talking about men's issues. There have been people trying to, let's say, railroad the men's issues conversation in the way that they think it should go. And I think this is the part where I was saying that we need to be kind of like steadfast on. We need to like keep an eye on it and make sure that if it starts to take off, it doesn't go in a direction that is essentially not going to take us anywhere. And it's going to keep us at square one. And one example is, as you call it, the Good Cuck Project, or you guys might know it as the Good Man Project, which is really not in men's best interest, only in so far as how they can serve feminist women. But that's it. So there's this Australian website called 10 Daily, and it's entitled, the article is called, I'm All for Feminism, but We Need a Men's Rights Manifesto. And so I'm not going to read the article, but basically what he says is, he concludes that what we need is, we need to talk about men's issues, but we should not attack feminism, because he thinks it shouldn't be an anti-woman movement. And we've already established that being anti-woman and being anti-feminist are not the same. And that's just meant to be a distraction from, you know, what the real discussions are. He calls it the AMRA, actual men's rights activists, because apparently men's rights activists aren't real because they're attacking feminism. It should not be seen as a competitor to feminism, is what he suggests. And it also should not be an exercise in self-flagellation while also claiming that men have done and continue to do awful things all throughout history, you know, and all this other really dumb shit, right? It's not about power, so we can't bring back the patriarchy, blah, blah, blah. So this stuff you have to be on the lookout for. When you see someone who starts to say, I'm all for men's rights, but then you have to, like, you know, be aware, because there are people within all corners of the manosphere that are, let's say, angry at the way that things have shaken out for them. Or they're just mad because they've been lied to for years and years and years. But those men are not a threat by themselves. As long as men's groups continue to focus on what is really important, which is either male improvement, fixing the laws, and fighting feminism, which unfortunately you have to do. You have to, because in my opinion, it is the current paradigm that we operate under. So if you bring up men's issues, the average schmo, the average blue pill person is going to counteract with a feminist argument. And they're going to look at you like, you know, you just took a dump on their hamburger. Like, they don't understand what you're talking about. And I think that you have to defeat the current narrative, which is the feminist narrative, before you can even start talking about the men's issues narrative.
Right. Can you go back to that article for a second? I had some couple things I wanted to comment on.
Sure. What do you want me to go to?
Just the top of the article, so people can actually see the article. And guys, I mean, obviously, you know, check out the article. Hopefully it'll be in the description of this video. Check this article out, because here is a perfect example of feminist entryism into the manosphere. Okay. Mm-hmm. It's exactly like what Brian said. Okay. This author confuses the hatred of feminism with the hatred of women. Now, I looked at the author himself. Apparently he's not only an author, he's a comedian. And this article is definitely a joke, but unfortunately the joke is on him. This guy hates men. He promotes misandry like everybody else who shames men. And I'm not talking about, you know, men who are unethical or things like that. I'm just talking about men in general. He has a real problem with it. He conflates the men's rights movement with the entire manosphere. And he thinks that the entire manosphere is the men's rights movement, when the reality is the men's rights movement is just one tribe of many within the manosphere. And the thing is that, again, this guy reminds me of a feminist men's rights entryist similar to the Good Cuck Project. And what he wants to do with this article is he wants to define what the men's rights movement should be. But the problem is that he's a cuck, and he wouldn't know a masculine man if he got hit with 9 inches of masculine limp dick. Further, he seeks to censor men who have problems with feminist bigotry. This by itself should demonstrate that this guy is a male feminist cosplaying as a men's rights activist. It's fucking pathetic. And that's the thing, is you see these cucked men, these blue-pilled men, they turn around and they go after men. And they're like, oh, you shouldn't do anything other than worship at the altar of the golden vagina. Now, go play hide and go fuck yourself. How about that? And that's the thing, is that when you look at this stuff and you start approaching these people on the issues, that's when there's a problem. That's when you see all the ad hom and the character assassination and everything else come in. That's how you know they're dishonest. Let me tell you something. This type of bigotry is so endemic with the feminist movement, with socialism, with communism, that they go together. This kind of corruption, these kind of dishonesty, they go together like peanut butter and jelly. It's really sad.
Absolutely. And this is like everything that you said, absolutely right on that. This is just a person that's running cover for feminism, because that's the only thing that ultimately matters. That, and they defend it like they defend their single mother. And I say that like with all seriousness. I think that most of the time, what we're dealing with when we're dealing with blue-pilled men, most of the time we're dealing with men who are raised by single moms, or men whose fathers were just like defeated and browbeaten by their wives. And so they don't have that backbone. They don't understand the importance of masculinity and like just how crucial it is, because they've been conditioned to, they either have problems with their dad or they've never known him. So
I agree with that completely. So I know there were some other things you wanted to move on and talk about, so let's go ahead and
So this is an example of it happening from the outside. We've also, I don't know if you've seen this, but there was a couple of videos about Cassie J's documentary The Red Pill, and there, you know, when she put it out back in, was it 2017, you know, there was a lot of talk and buzz around it, but now it's been like 3 years or almost 3 years coming on. And there have been more recent videos being made about it in an effort to dismiss it, most of which seem to have been coming from either BreadTube or just sort of mainstream YouTube. There was a YouTuber we just did a partial response to called Knowing Better, and he's a veteran. And, you know, he's done a lot of videos about history and culture, but he's recently been doing these kind of like pro-feminist, pro-SJW video content. And he made one about men's rights activists. And again, it's the same thing. This is what you have to be careful of. This is why I'm bringing it up. He comes from a place of what seems like compassion, what seems like, you know, well, these are good ideas. However, and then it just devolves into covering for feminism, justifying feminism. The only way that you can perform any kind of human rights activism, particularly when it comes to gender, revolves around feminism. And at the same time, and this is what really pisses me off, actually, and let me know what you think about this, because this is one of my more controversial opinions, where there are places or areas of discussion that are clearly men's issues, these people divide it up and they make it into issues of a different type. And I think it is intentionally to distract away from the obvious connection to men's issues in general. For example, prison reform is something that he brings up. But he says, I've always seen that as a race issue and not a men's issue. He says that because, you know, he has this statistic that says that blacks are more likely to serve longer sentences. Black men. specifically, right? Or black. He'll just say blacks, though, because you can't say men. And but the difference between what men serve and what women serve is far bigger than the difference between like what white men serve and what black men serve.
Let's talk about that for a second, because the reality is it. I mean, and I want to touch on this end piece too, but I also want to bring up something else as well. So here's the thing: the black community is the canary in the coal mine. And what Absolutely. A lot of people don't realize when they don't know their history, and this is something I talk about in my book, The Feminist Lie, is that the African-American community was targeted by feminists back in the 1910, 1920, 1930s. So what ends up happening is that their families were destroyed first. What a lot of people don't realize is that before second wave feminism was a thing, there were more intact black families, African-American families specifically, than there were Caucasian families. Absolutely. In fact, if you look at the civil rights movement in the 1960s, the majority of black men were, you know, they worked, they had jobs, the unemployment rate wasn't as low as it was for Caucasians, but there were more people that were working. They were dressed in suit and ties. Even Martin Luther King, I believe the reason they called him Dr. King is because he had a PhD. A lot of these voices back then, they actually had high levels of education in useful fields of study. Whereas today, it's get your degree in social justice bigotry and don't contribute to anything. Just learn how to be a professional bitch. Mm-hmm. And that's the problem. So then when you talk about these guys in the manosphere who say this type of stuff, the problem that you have is that they are corrupt. They are unethical and they seek to take advantage of other men. Now, I'm not saying that people who are voices within the manosphere should not be compensated for what they do. That's not what I'm saying. I believe in capitalism. But what I am saying is that no one should be making money off of the misery of others. No one should be required to victimize others in order to do that. And the problem that we have in the manosphere is that there are voices like the one you brought up. And I did a couple of videos called The Vichy Male recently, where I brought up another individual who's been around a long time. And what they do is they profit off of men's misery. They profit off of men who, for whatever reason, need direction. They haven't had good mentorship and they have no solutions. They say, oh, you know, and again, or what they do is that when you have a solution in front of you, they tell you not to do it. And that's why I get it really pissed off when I see these people and they're like, look, hold on, Jen. Yeah, my book is available on Kindle. Check it out on Amazon. So when you look at these people, they go, oh, well, don't be politically active or don't listen to like I know like this content creator who in the Vichy Mail. All this guy does is plagiarize.
We can get into that.
Yeah, let's dive into that now, because I'll tell you what he does is and just so we're on the same page, we're talking about Rollo Tomasi. Rollo Tomasi is been in the manosphere for an extremely long time. He has he started out on a PUA website called So Suave.
Yeah, he was probably like one of the biggest, if not the biggest name in the Red Pill, like at least the guy who gets the most sort of press attention. He had the website or the blog called The Rational Male. Is that right?
Yeah, he had The Rational Male. But the thing about The Rational Male is actually the guy who was getting probably the most attention was probably Roosh. And was probably number two. But I would agree. I would agree with that, definitely. I mean, he's been around for a long time. Mm-hmm. But he started as a PUA moderator on a PUA website. But the thing about it is that he was on this PUA website as a moderator when he was married and he had a kid. So like his entire history is kind of suspect when you look at the basically, you know, kind of like the whole narrative that is Rollo Tomasi. And then on top of that, then he starts going and he starts working with Roosh and things like that. Now Roosh V, for those who don't know, Roosh V was a longtime PUA. Now he's kind of transitioned away from PUA.
He's like a tradcon now, right?
He's tradcon now, but even before he got there, he started creating this thing called neo-masculinity around 2015. When he decided to switch over to neo-masculinity, Rollo hammered the hell out of him for it, and it was kind of an issue back then. This is probably 2015, 2016. But if you look at if you go to Roosh's website, you go to his blog, and you look at – he actually wrote like a neo-masculinity manifesto. Mm-hmm. In 2016, you look at that, Rollo hammers him in 2016 for it. And then he adopts about 50% of the manifesto for himself, rewords it, and then takes it and applies it to himself and to his own brand. And he does this a lot with a lot of MGTOW content creators as well. Like he's taken, you know, I don't communicate with Turd Flinging Monkey anymore, but he's taken some of what Turd Flinging Monkey has said. He's reworded it and kind of, you know, filtered it through the what I like to refer to as the Rollo Tomasi $100 word machine. Yeah. And then he shits it out as though it's his own.
Yeah.
You know, and like I, one of the things I talk about is I talk about, for example, I talk about the role and the importance of the extended family, because I think that, you know, when we talk about feminism, I'm going to kind of jump tracks here a little bit. When we talk about feminism, a lot of people talk about the differences between being single and the nuclear family. Well, the nuclear family is a lie. It's the extended family that counts. And I was the first person in the manosphere to talk about that. Rollo started plagiarizing what I was saying about it, and now he like acts as though it's his own thing. Now, to his credit, the first time he brought it up, he did credit me for it. But again, I'm just giving you examples out there where, you know, he's just taking other people's content, regurgitating it with his $100 words, making it five times more verbose than it needs to be, and then all of a sudden just, you know, acting as though it was his all along. And that's the thing that's really frustrating, is that he's really big on communicating the problem, but he has no solutions. And there are and I'm not this isn't like a kick Rollo sort of thing. Rollo's one example of many. There are lots of men within the manosphere that they don't have solutions. Now, I know Parking Lot Batman, I know you're saying this is gay drama. Let me explain something to you about masculine males for a second, because I think that you bring up an important point. And that's this. Men have been so emasculated, they've been so cucked, they've been so blue-pilled, that anytime there's a problem, they write it off as drama and they run the fuck away. If that is your problem resolution skill, if that's your conflict resolution skill, you're not red pill. Because the reality is that when times are tough in your personal life, it doesn't matter who you are, when times are tough in your personal life and you don't know how to resolve conflict, or when you have to deal with somebody at your job who's corrupt, or you have to deal with somebody in your personal life, whether it's a brother, a sister, a mom, or somebody who's treating you unethically, if your conflict resolution skill is this is drama and I run away, that doesn't work all the time. It really doesn't. Men solve problems. Hey, let me give you an example. Okay. Well, there were two hurricanes that came last year. There was one that came up from the Gulf of Mexico, and there was one that came from the Atlantic Ocean. Can you imagine what would have happened if all those emergency responders went, you know what? That hurricane's a lot of drama. Fuck that. I'm out. Right.
Yeah.
I'm gonna take the bitch method, and I'm going to bitch out, and I'm going to run the fuck away. I just want the paycheck, but I don't want to do any of the work. They didn't do that. Those men ran to the danger. They ran to the problem and they went to fix it. And that's what masculine males do. That's what healthy men do. When I say men built society, I mean they built all of it. And more importantly, men maintain that shit. Like there was I think it was last year, it might have been this part of this year, I don't remember, but there was like this big thing about feminists going, look, women shouldn't go to work. Let's see what they do. Ha 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 ha. So all these women didn't go to work and nobody gave a shit. Everything functioned like it normally would. Now imagine if men all took a day off. Imagine like, you know, how society would just crumble right there.
Yeah.
I mean, we see it just like when male police officers go on strike, you watch the crime rate skyrocket. Mm-hmm. When male firefighters go on strike, you watch fires get out of control and all this death and destruction. Men solve problems. You know, can you imagine what would happen to society if firefighters and police officers said, oh my God, there's crime. I don't want to be a part of that drama. I think I'm just going to stay at the station. I mean, now granted, they probably do that in like liberal places, right? Like Portland, like Andy Ngo, right? Those police officers, you know, they're like, well, yeah, I think I'd rather stay at the station than do my fucking job. Or like when Milo Yiannopoulos was, you know, getting assaulted and all those, you know, Antifa people showed up and all those cops went, yeah, let's just go ahead and stand down. Like, that's not normal. That's not what masculine men do. Masculine men solve problems. And when problems come to our doorstep, We take out the trash. We solve the problems. We handle, because the reality is no one protects men except for men. And only masculine men are willing to protect men and willing to protect society. Obviously, women and children are impacted by this as well, and they benefit from it. But I think that at the end of the day, if everybody, if your conflict resolution skill is this is drama and I'm too much of a bitch to face it head on, then my suggestion is that you should move to Oregon, get on disability, because if you're on disability in the state of Oregon, they will give you the trans surgery you need.
Hmm. Okay. I got a couple more super chats, and then I thought we'd like tell a little bit of the story of Roosh, and I think, or not Roosh, I'm sorry, of Rollo. I think that it's important to know where we stand within the manosphere with other people, especially prominent figures, but it doesn't have to be, because it's not about them being big names. It's about like, are we like, it's about us maintaining our integrity and our and that we like are on the same page with regards to what our values are. And so that means that when somebody is, you know, operating in bad faith, either within or from outside, we have to be able to point at them and say, those people don't represent us. Those people have, you know, they have bad intentions or whatever, and warn other men about it. It's just another way for us to protect each other, right?
Oh, I agree completely. And I think that that's the thing is that, you know, when it comes to ethics, a man is only as good as his word, right? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we have to be able to, I always say this, if you have a problem, try to bring a solution. Even if it's the wrong solution in life, try to bring some kind of solution, because what that does is that inspires the conversation, that inspires the mutual brainstorming. I mean, there are people in my personal life, there are people that I've, you know, worked with online, you know, YouTube and other places, and they think about things in a different way than I do. And so they bring that knowledge and experience and wisdom to the table, and they share it with me. And when they disagree with me, I'm like, oh yeah, I hadn't really considered that. And many times when I'm wrong, I'm like, absolutely, you know, let's go do this direction instead of that direction, or you've considered something that I haven't considered. And basically what we're talking about is being informed enough to do a cost benefit analysis to make the best decisions we can.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And that means eliminating any needless, values, needless integers, like things that are not going to make the problems easier to solve, right? They're just going to add needless complexity. All right. So,
well, and I need to make sure something else is important too. Uh-huh. I'm not talking about the differences between the tribes of the manosphere. That's not where I'm going with that.
No.
Because I know that I've spoken with many prominent people of many different tribes of the manosphere. And the one thing that many of these people have in common is their commitment to ethics and their commitment to the goal of helping men become better men.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. All right, X-Man gives us $2 and says, new MRA member picked up as a writer for AVFM. I think you're talking about yourself. If so, congratulations, and I hope that you do good work. Master Rogue gives us $2 and says, how come you don't speak to TFM anymore? Turd Flinging Monkey, I think he means. This is a question for you. You don't have to answer it.
Yeah. Well, no, it's fine. I'll briefly touch on it, because I mean, it is what it is. You know, I had some concerns back in August of last year. I tried multiple times to bring those to his attention. My concerns fell on deaf ears, and I made a video about it, and we moved our separate ways. If TFM ever wanted to talk to me about those things, then I think that's important. But this is one of those examples where when there's a disagreement amongst masculine men, this disagreement should not interfere with the relationship. Men should not be so fragile that they can't handle disagreement amongst themselves, especially when the relationship is important. Mm. I mean, even today, I still consider TFM a friend, and I respect a lot of what he's done. And I've said this before, and I'll say it again. You know, TFM is one of my foundations within the manosphere, and a lot of his older content is very, very good. So, you know, for people who, you know, maybe his detractors, I would just say this. Listen, there are people out there like Matt Forney and many other people who are completely, you know, pro their own little tribe of the manosphere. Every one of them, when you get, and I've seen Matt Forney admit this publicly, a lot of these guys get their initial red pilling from MGTOW content. And mm-hmm. so when it comes to a lot of TFM's older content, absolutely, it's worth a watch. Absolutely, it's you know, worth it. And, you know, I haven't watched his content in a while. I've been too busy dealing my own thing. But, you know, I have a lot of respect for what TFM does, regardless of what the disagreement is there. So, you know, what the future holds, who knows? But as far as that's concerned, you know, it is what it is.
All right. Okay, so that's it for the Super Chats. I guess I don't know if we finished talking. Oh, yeah, right. So what's this, if you don't mind, what's the specific thing with Rollo that happened? What's the main issue so people understand?
All right. So my main issue with Rollo Tomasi, and I'm speaking for myself here. I know that there are a lot of people who agree with me, but my issue with Rollo Tomasi is number one, I personally believe that he plagiarizes other people, and I believe that he uses other people's content to make himself money. Now, obviously, there's a lot of red pill wisdom that's out there. Everybody says it in a different way, and maybe the way Brian Martinez says it is different than the way that, you know, DDJ / Bob Lewis says it is different than the way Anthony Johnson says it, right? So that's not what I'm talking about, but I'm just saying that the plagiarism does happen. But what inspired me to make the two video series and possibly some more depending on what happens down the line is that everybody knows about, you know, Antifa and doxing, right? Are you familiar with that, Brian?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So doxing is a huge issue on the left. The left goes out and they dox everybody, right? They've doxed ICE employees. They've doxed IRS employees. They've doxed all these different people. And they go out and then they target them. They go to their houses. They go to the events and they victimize them. Well, all of Antifa, they're feminists. And more importantly, they're SJWs. So the issue that
I just want to say really quick, I've been beating that drum for a while to try to point out that Antifa are not simply, you know, a bunch of anarchists, which is how a lot of the media, even the media that's like, you know, not defending Antifa, like the mainstream media, they sort of like, they describe them as anarchists, and I describe them as feminists because it's very important. Antifa sells, because Antifa is not the name of the organization. It's sort of like the name of the overall, it's more like an umbrella term, but there are subgroups that have their own names, such as By Any Means Necessary, such as, you know, In the Name of Humanity, whatever.org, anti whatever, you know, there's all these other groups, right? But all of those groups are led by women in academia, the ones that I've seen, and they're feminist women that run them.
Right. Right. And let me explain something for those that don't know history. The way that Antifa organizes is the same way that the feminists organized the White Feather Movement back in, in 1910, 1920s. What they do is they have one feminist leader surrounded by a bunch of guys. The feminist leader is the mouthpiece. She's the one that argues. She's the one that yells. And then once she winds up the guy, then the other guys beat up the other guy because they're protecting my lady's honor. That's how Antifa rolls. That's what they do. These people are dangerous. They carry guns. They assault people. And it doesn't matter if they assault, you know, whites, blacks, Asians, members of the LGBT community. Anybody who opposes communism, anybody who opposes socialism, anybody who opposes feminism or any of those bigotries, those people are targeted by Antifa. Now, this is important to know because what happened in October 2018 during one of the after hours events at the 21 convention in Orlando, Florida, was that Rollo Tomasi, who I believe at that time was an ambassador for the convention, had been working with a feminist reporter from the New York Times. Now, he'd been working with her since July of that year. Now, I showed some documents on the screen in the particular videos. I got an unprecedented look behind the curtain of 21 Convention and 21 Studios. I signed some NDAs. So I do have permission to share what I'm about to share and to share what I've shared in my videos. So Rollo actually advocated for this feminist to come to the convention, and because everybody wanted to know where it's at. One of the important aspects about the convention is that it is safe. So Anthony Dream Johnson and his 21 convention team, they make sure that the location is hidden. They make sure that the speakers are not doxed. They make sure that everybody is protected during the event. Because again, Antifa threats are real. This is a huge issue. And so they wanted to protect the men that are there, not only from protest and harassment, but from physical threats as well. In fact, one person apparently from Canada had been so concerned about it, even though it turned out to be unwarranted later. Rich Cooper actually dropped out of the event because he was afraid for his safety. Now, this could be because he's Canadian and Justin Trudeau is his prime minister or whatever. But the reality is that that convention, for the most part, was safe. However, at this After Hours event, we fast forward to this After Hours event. This feminist reporter from the New York Times shows up and starts communicating with the people that are there. Nobody got invited. Nobody invited this person. This person was supposed to go the Monday after the event was over, and they were supposed to be tightly supervised in a very controlled environment. And the speakers who were absolutely, who were okay speaking with her, they were going to go and have this conversation with her and do interviews. Anybody who didn't want to talk to her wasn't going to, and they put a firewall between the attendees and this feminist reporter. That was the goal. So when the feminist reporter shows up the night before around 10:30 at night local time and shows up at this cigar bar, sure, there were some people that were kind of, you know, saying, hey, we're smoking cigars, that kind of thing. What they found out later when the 21 convention team investigated, what they found out later was that it was Rollo Tomasi who doxed the location of that cigar bar and personally invited her to that event. That is bullshit. Why the fuck would you sit there and you put these fucking men's lives in jeopardy because you want to make a buck? See, the thing about it is that when I looked at the investigation, I found that this guy had been trying to shill for the New York Times, trying to get them to write his articles about his books and doing this. And I don't have a problem. Again, I don't have a problem with capitalism. I don't have a problem with people making a buck. But why the fuck would you do it at the expense of other men? Mm-hmm. Why would you put other men's lives on the fucking line for this? There was a full investigation that was done by the 21 convention, by the 21 studios. This was nothing less than traitorous betrayal. And even Rollo himself was saying stuff in chats, and I put this in my second video, where he's talking about selling out the manosphere to feminists and confirming everything they were saying was true so he could sell out to CNN and make a huge amount of money for this. And everybody was like, holy shit, this is retarded. You know, and again, so when I talk to people and I say, look, a man is only as good as his word, this is what I'm talking about. You know, I always say on my channel, I say, trust but verify. And what I mean by that is this. If you're in a relationship with a woman, or you're in a professional relationship, or you even working with another man in the manosphere, verify what they say is true sometimes. Because I'll tell you what, people act in their self-interest. And in the case of Rollo Tomasi, his self-interest trumped protecting the men he was there to protect. Not only was this man a senior speaker for the 21 convention, not only was he part of the inner circle of 21 studios and trusted by all the men, all these men had given him complete trust. Mm-hmm. They had given him 100% access. He betrayed them all, every fucking one of them. He put them all at risk. He put them all in danger. Rollo Tomasi is a traitor. He knows where these people live. He's been to their houses.
Yeah.
What if he doxes those people to Antifa? What if he doxes those people to you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean, I know what you're saying. You're putting men at jeopardy. Don't make money off the expense of other men. It's wrong. It's unethical. That's the problem. And so when you do stuff like this, you have to be called out. This unethical behavior has to be called out. It has to be addressed, because everybody's trying to paint this as though it's a personality conflict between Anthony Dream Johnson and Rollo Tomasi. This has nothing to do with personality. This has everything to do, and it always has everything to do with ethics. And that's the problem. I don't even think that the people that Rollo Tomasi surrounds himself with even know the extent of his betrayal, because Rollo Tomasi has bullshitted him so effectively. And again, I've seen a lot of these people doing it. I disagree with some of what Rich Cooper says. I have a lot of respect for him. I know the people at 21 Convention have a lot of respect for him. I know the people at 21 Studios have a lot of respect for them. I've had conversation. Red Man Group, same thing. You know, these people have developed relationships over years. But if you're going to dox the location of a private men's space to a feminist New York Times reporter, that's a problem. And here's the thing. A lot of people have tried to deflect on this, and they've said shit like, well, you know, there could be – no, this isn't gossip. This is what's called verifiable facts and observable reality. Mm-hmm. So for people that are there, you know, that I see a couple comments there. We got some Rolo tribals here. That's fine. You know, hashtag Cuck Lives Matter. But anyway, what I'm saying is that when you dox these types of locations, right, that's a problem. Mm-hmm. You're putting men's lives in jeopardy. That's a problem. And then on top of that, Rolo tried to swindle Anthony Dream Johnson and Rich Cooper out of their ownership interest in the Redman Group LLC for nothing. He just wanted them to give it to him for free. And he had been trying to work behind the scenes with other men who were involved in the Redman Group to get them to turn on Anthony Dream Johnson, to get them turn on 21 Studios, to get them to turn on 21 Convention. And this was a long-term plan. I saw emails demonstrated this. I saw private chats. Rolo actually had a private chat where he was basically telling everybody, and these people were working together to try to get everybody to ask for refunds for their 21 Convention tickets. That's tortious interference with a business relationship. And more importantly, that's unethical. That's bitch thinking. That's mm-hmm. what that is. That's jealousy. That's feminine behavior. That's beta behavior. And that's a problem. So, you know, again, we have to pay attention to ourselves, and we may be of different tribes within the manosphere, and we may disagree ideologically on some of the things we deal with, but it doesn't matter where you sit within the manosphere, whether you're a PUA, whether you're an MRA, or whether you're just a red pill tradcon or whatever, you know, you are, you're only as good as your word. And I would rather disagree with somebody on issues than disagree on ethics, because the reality is when you disagree on ethics, that's a problem. Mm-hmm. Ethics are there for a reason. Professionalism is there for a reason. And when you betray men, that's a problem. He betrayed everybody that's there. I saw a screenshot where George Bruno was confronting this feminist, trying to make sure it was a diffused situation. And you can see Rolo off the side with that stupid little fucking hat that he wears, where he's smirking. And the thing is, here's the thing. This is how he set this up. Everybody at the event, except for George Bruno, if I remember correctly, was drinking. So they were all, you know, three or four or five drinks on the wrong side. Rolo gets this feminist to show up, hoping that these people, while intoxicated, get so upset and out of control that they create this big, huge fiasco, which causes her to write this hit piece. That's what it looks like his goal was. Now, I can't confirm that for sure, but that's how it appears based on all the facts that I'm aware of. It was completely wrong. It was completely unethical. Mm-hmm. And again, it demonstrates that, you know, you watch, I guarantee you, Rolo will be writing for the Good Cuck Project. Watch.
Okay. I'll be on the lookout for that. Then thanks for telling us the story. I just want to be caught up because whatever your feelings are on the individual, I think that they are not as relevant as what we are really talking about, which is the behavior, which is the ethics of this, right? That's ultimately where the problem lies. Because if you're talking about the person, then it becomes like a thing, like you were saying, Bob, where it basically becomes a conversation about personalities or, you know, egos and all that. And it's like those things don't matter. What was done and how is this harmful? Especially if it was agreed that this should not be done. For example, at our convention, we are going to have press there, but everyone knows it. And so they're all basically that everyone who's coming is signing essentially they're signing off on or they're signing on with the idea that, yeah, we're probably going to run into, you know, local mainstream media outlets that are interested in our convention. And that means that they're probably going to try to write hit pieces. And we are OK with that. But if we weren't, then there will be an understanding that we don't share this info. And I mean, like, some of us know where the location is, but we haven't given out the address of the venue because of the same reason you were talking about, because we don't want Antifa there. And I'm telling you, in Chicago, there is an Antifa presence in the city, and there is a Communist Party, like, in Chicago. And so I don't want that to get out until the last minute, because the people who are coming to the conference need to know where it is. So this is a question of ethics, and that's ultimately what we are discussing. But I just wanted to understand, because the lesson that you can take away from this, if anything, is that it doesn't matter how long someone has been with an organization or within a subculture or tribe of the manosphere or whatever you want to call it. It doesn't matter how well known they are. It doesn't matter how big they get or how small they are. They're all prone to this kind of behavior. Like, we can, it can happen to any of us. And so we have to be adamant to not let that get out of control and not put men at risk, or women for that matter, as in the case of the ICMI. And I think it's good to know when this is happening and where it's coming from. So does that make sense, Bob?
Oh, absolutely. No, absolutely. And I think that that's the thing that's important. Again, it's not about personality. It's about, you don't dox a location to feminists. That's what it's about. Mm-hmm. It's about, you don't try to con people out of their owner interest of their business. You just don't do that. And then you backbite them for months at a time in hopes that everybody's going to jump on the bandwagon with you, and you manipulate everybody behind the scenes. And that's what I saw. Mm-hmm. And I know that 21 Studios is talking with attorneys. I know that they are looking at what all their legal options are, because there was damage done. And don't be surprised if 21 Studios just, they go out and they do their thing. So don't be surprised if they make any kind of issues there.
All right.
So, you know.
Absolutely. Oh, thanks for the subscriptions. I got a couple of subscriptions. Cool. Okay, so I got one more super chat here. Naif Mitch gives us $5 Canadian and says, unpopular opinion, men can help make women better too. It's the point of marriage to me, two good people who partner to become better together. I mean, maybe that's unpopular. I think it makes sense. I mean, I'm married, and I don't have any shame in admitting that, and I think that I make my wife a better person too. And I think that's one of the reasons why she married me, in fact. So, okay. So we've been going for about an hour and 22 minutes. I think I'm going to wrap up the show here, but do you have any final thoughts or anything that maybe you wanted to say that we didn't get into?
Well, I think that the most important thing is that men need to be focused on building bridges with other men, not only in society, but within the different tribes of the manosphere. And I think that what you should avoid are men who ad hom for the sake of ad homing. In other words, men who make character attacks, or men who try to reframe what other men say in the worst possible light. That's feminine behavior. That's bitch thinking. That's the behavior of a purple pill power bottom. And what a purple pill power bottom is really, it's a blue pill cuck that sits in the manosphere, and their only goal is to act nihilistic and to bring other people down. They don't bring any value other than the entertainment value. And they're kind of overly dramatic, and they end up being locals at the end of the day. But I think that the thing is that for men, we need to be really focused on building each other up. We need to be focused on, supporting ethical men, supporting, healthy masculinity, supporting, the women who want to help us in that space. But I also think that we need to be supporting male voices, whether it's Red Man Group, whether it's the male voices or even the female voices in Honey Badger Radio, whether it's smaller YouTubers or larger YouTubers. I think men across the internet can do a lot to support one another and understand that there is no gender war, but there is a war on men. And so as long as you understand that, and as long as you're seeking red pill wisdom from a variety of different places, it doesn't matter what tribe you're in. All that matters is that you get that knowledge and experience so that you can make a more informed decision to be a better man.
Yeah. Also, remember that there's really more of overlapping concentric circles rather than tribes. A lot of guys that, like, they'll fall into multiple camps at once, and don't let the people that make it only about where the differences are divide us, because it's really where we share like-minded ideas. That's where we are more alike, right? Way more alike, in fact. So it's just about, the little things, like, in what ways do we think this, where do we think the solutions are? Is men's rights political? And if it is, can an MRA be left-wing? Like, questions like that. I think those are good questions to ask. So I got another super chat from my boy Luke. He's my friend and an animator. He gives us $5. Thanks, Luke. He says, is it feasible to support men who reject that support? I mean, like, I personally do. I even offer, honest to God, I even offer straight up support to male feminists and white knights, because I think that they're not happy and they're going to suffer. And I want to save them from that. And maybe that just maybe I'm just like going above and beyond, but that's what I think. So I believe so. But what do you think, Bob?
Well, here's what I think. I think you can't help a man who's unwilling to help himself. And every man is in a different place in his life and not all the time. Are you familiar with the idea of cultural lag?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. So for those people who don't know, in a nutshell, what cultural lag is when technology or when knowledge goes to a certain point, it takes a while for culture to catch up to it. And the time that it takes for it to catch up to it is what's called cultural lag. Well, a lot of people in their own personal lives, they have cultural lag when it comes to red pill wisdom. And so a lot of times men need to see things and they need to determine things for themselves before they can actually turn around and accept the wisdom that you're trying to help. So I'm saying, you know, be available to those people, be, you know, in their environment, offer friendship, offer fellowship. And when those people are ready to accept the wisdom, you know, they'll ask and you'll have an idea of when and where and how you can help them. As far as male feminists are concerned, well, I don't teach pegging classes, so there's that.
Fair enough, fair enough. Okay, so with that said, we're just going to go ahead and get out of here. I want to thank you, Bob, for coming on, and I look forward to going on your stream tomorrow on your channel, Mystery Today. So I put a link to his YouTube in the low bar. So yeah, go ahead and check that out. And he's got a lot of great video content you can watch. We don't have to agree on everything. That's not relevant. The point is we agree with where it's important. And we try, at least I try for my part, to be as ethical as possible. Because I believe in, I want to find the truth. And that's basically what set me on this path. And I think that, I don't know, like that just has the highest value in my opinion. So if you guys could hit like, subscribe, if you're not already subscribed, hit the bell for notifications. And leave us a comment. Let us know what you think about this discussion. I'd appreciate it very much. Luke just gave us another $2 and says, this man is amazing. Here is $2. Thanks, Luke. I don't know who you're talking about, but I'm going to assume it's to me. And
Absolutely.
So, yeah, leave us a comment. Let us know what you think about this show. I want to thank you guys for coming on the Fireside Chat. And I want to thank Bob Lewis for joining me as a guest. And, yeah, with that said, I'm going to get out of here. Thanks, guys, for coming on. And we'll talk to you later.